and it was just such a whimper. I can deal with losing, but losing that like that, and particularly to Arsenal, no, it definitely has taken a bit of the shine off the team.
I think FIFA are in a difficult position in terms of punishment because they've had such a lax attitude to punishment for things that are far more serious crimes than wearing a poppy.
And the culture that he's currently instilled in that side is one where it's okay to lose.
I read something today that said Wolves have scored more goals against the Premier League top six than Man United have.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the podcast that gives real football fans a voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and this week on the pod, I'm joined by the lovely returning Natasha. How are you doing, Tash?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Han?
Very, very well, thank you. It is a bit far away from Christmas and New Year to start asking about people's Christmas and New Year. So again, I will not go into that. So I will move on to our second guest, Greg. How you doing, sir?
I'm not good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Love, love. And I guess I have to now offer that Happy New Year to our third guest, Joel.
Merry New Year to everybody.
You good? Let's just get it out. Happy Easter, happy Christmas, happy birthday, happy anniversary, all of it. Right, it's all in one go. We've got a lot to get through on the pod this week, guys. So we're going to jump straight in with some drive-bys. I'm going to start with Joel. With our first drive-by. First one is, what's wrong with Phil Neville being named the England women's manager?
Nothing's wrong with it if you like Phil Neville. But, I'm not sure if he... Wasn't there no one else? Do you know what I mean? And I just think that he's just walked straight into that job. All right, he's done a few... You know, he's had a few roles where he's been in, you know, behind the scenes and worked alongside people who have done great stuff. Or not so great stuff, as is the case down at Valencia, with his brother. So I just think it just smacks of jobs for the boys all over again. It seems to be like this new merry-go-round that's about to get going with Ryan Giggs as well. And for me, that I'm not sure, are they qualified for this role? Have they done their coaching badges and stuff like that? I'm assuming they have, but you know, it would be good to know. It would have been good to be made aware of that, as well as, you know, all of their football achievements and stuff like that. They talk a good game. They've done good stuff when they were players. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to translate as managers. Isn't there a woman that could have had that job as well? Do you know what I mean? And if there isn't, why not? Why are we not building up the amount of women that could potentially walk into that role? So there's a whole load of issues that didn't sit well with me in terms of why, you know, him getting the job over everybody else.
Okay. Let's move to Natasha now. I can't work out how good Emre Can is. How good do you think he is? Is he a good player or is he one of those players that, you know, on paper, his stats might look all right and neat and tidy, but actually he ain't really doing nothing? Because Juventus apparently want him hard.
Is he good? He's very, It's like,
What does he do? What's he good at? What are his strengths?
He's very good at hair. His hair is amazing. And his beard game is strong. That's pretty much
is that
my
pretty much his strength?
It's all product, isn't it? It's all product.
I feel like, I don't know, it's been a really weird situation. I think he could be one of those players that is good, but is possibly not going to be his best at Liverpool. I think there's been a lot of talk about him moving. He doesn't seem to have settled. He struggled with Premier League football. So he could go to Juventus and be amazing. But I don't think he'll be missed. Liverpool fans I've spoken to aren't too worried about it, although they could do with a bit more meat in midfield, you know, to go with all the flouncy pretty stuff. But yeah, I don't think he's a great player. He could become a great player. Maybe he's better than good, which means he's probably a 6.5 out of 10.
But no more.
No more.
Greg, of these three owners I'm about to name, which one do you feel is failing the fans of their club the most? Stan Kroenke, Mike Ashley, or the two Daves at West Ham?
Oh, Mike Ashley.
Yeah?
Yeah. Why? Well, he's terrible. Kroenke's managed decline, isn't it? But with Newcastle, it's not a good thing. It's all relative. But with Ashley, it's just decline and he doesn't care. At least Kroenke wants to milk the asset. Ashley doesn't even want the asset, but he wants to...
From a fan's point of view, which set of fans do you think feel most let down by the
Newcastle. Because I mean, now he's saying that I'm not going to sell to this person because they're not a real bidder. I think even if they weren't a real bidder, Newcastle fans would take it, you know what I mean? I think Ashley is definitely bottom of the class on that. Not to say that the other three are brilliant, but I think maybe the West Ham guys get a bit of a bad press, not because they're good, but they're kind of bumbling in a way that a fan would be if they were in charge of their club, which is exactly what they are. So, yeah.
One thing, guys, we were going to, I wasn't going to actually include in this week's pod, is the sacking yesterday of Marco Silva over at Watford. That was announced yesterday morning. But I thought it was such a significant sacking in terms of what it means for Watford, their current model, and the future for Marco Silva. I thought we need to try and get it in this week's pod. So to do that, I've got Mike, host of the podcast from the Rookery End. Mike, how are you doing, sir?
Really good, thank you. Really good.
Thanks for coming on, mate. Let's get straight to it. He was sacked yesterday. Is there a concern that that Silva pushed the board's expectations so high in the early part of the season, they maybe got to a point where they felt top 10 wasn't even enough? Or was it just a case of his form recently has been so bad post the Everton flirtation, he had to go?
Yeah, I don't think that it's anything to do with expectations, to be perfectly honest. I think the position that Watford are in at the moment is a false one. I think in your average Premier League season, there's no way that Watford would be sitting in 10th after the run of form they've had. But in terms of why they pulled the trigger at this stage, I think, yeah, the recent run of form combined with the appalling way, in fact, that I think Marco Silva handled the approach from Everton, I think the board felt his position was absolutely untenable. The approach from Everton was fairly public, and I'd go on the record and say I don't blame Everton for going for it. They were without a manager at the time. Watford were doing incredibly well under Marco at that time. I think we peaked at about fourth or fifth, and we're playing some really, really nice football for those first 9, 10 games under his reign. So I don't blame Everton for going for him. I was incredibly surprised with the way that Silva reacted. I felt that he had a lot to prove, and he should know that. He's had a lot of jobs before he came to the Premier League, and then he had a reasonable-ish spell at Hull, but ultimately, of course, ended in failure because they got relegated. So I thought for him to want to leave after 10 games... was pretty short-sighted from his point of view. And the more I think about it, the more I think it shows a lack of confidence in his own ability, because my firm belief is that all Marco Silva really had to do was deliver a vaguely impressive season for Watford, and by that I mean 12th, 13th, something like that, and a cup run. And I think a bigger job, whether it be when Arsene Wenger finally goes, or whether it be Tottenham if Pochettino disappears, or if it is Everton, a bigger job was always going to come along at the end of this season if he did a half-decent job for Watford. But he wasn't prepared to wait, and I think that spoke volumes about perhaps his confidence in it himself. He sort of snapped at the chance, if that makes sense.
Tell me a little bit about his management, his team selections, his substitutions. You watch him and the team every single week. What's changed? What has he done well? What has he done not so well?
I mean, there are mitigating circumstances. He has had to deal with some really chronic injuries. We're down to the bare bones recently. But what he did with Watford, he played one up front, but what he did magnificently, he got Watford transitioning from defence to attack beautifully. It was the best football we've seen at Vicarage Road for decades. It's been absolute joy to watch for that first nine or ten games. We had wing-backs bombing on. We had Nathaniel Chalabar in the centre of midfield, who was pulling the strings, picking passes, and just keeping things moving forward, always looking for a positive pass. And then he had his partner in crime, Abdoulaye Doucouré, in the centre with him. And then, of course, Richarlison, who no one knew anything about at that stage. So he was having an absolute field day, rampaging up and down the wing and skinning defenders and scoring. So it was very expansive, very good to watch. Employed the wing backs and just that transition from defence to attack, it happened so quickly. They'd sort of soak up a lot of pressure, and then all of a sudden you'd blink of an eye, they'd be up the other end and they'd created a chance. It was great to watch. And the other notable thing that happened in the early days under Marco Silva was that they came back into games. They were working for the 90 plus minutes. I think there was four occasions where they scored either in the last minute or very, very late, either to win the game or to rescue a point. And that, for me, showed that they absolutely believed in what Marco Silva was doing, and his approach to games and his training methods, whatever they may be. The players really responded to him. And that just disintegrated as soon as the Everton approach came in. So the word we've had is he was very, very meticulous. He's very inclusive with the players on the training ground. I think some were perhaps a bit frustrated by how meticulous he was. He got involved in virtually everything. But so when it was going well, it was superb to watch. Yeah. And it was absolutely no surprise that Everton came in for him, and no surprise that people were talking about him in terms of getting a next big job, perhaps in the top six or seven clubs.
Natasha, the drop off when the Everton interest came in was scary. Mike says there, you know, the form disintegrated. Is he all that? Because despite the kind of the good PR around him that came, this young, bright manager with new ideas, he's the next big thing. You know, Arsenal might want him, Everton might want him. They've lost to, I think, Burnley at home. They've lost to Huddersfield 4-1 at home this season. There's been some really bad results there this season. Is he all that, or were we just seeing a little bit of a hype? Was it just a good start?
I mean, I wouldn't judge a player after 20-25 games overall, so I would like to give a manager the same respect. I think, obviously, we haven't seen as much of him as he would have liked as he got the sack, but I think it's really hard to complete a whole judgment of him based over two teams, especially when he came into Hull and the state they were in. I don't think many people would have kept them up. The Watford situation, I find... Well, I don't think anyone's particularly to blame, but I do wonder why people are so angry with Marco Silva, because I wonder if you take a job at a company that is known for not being committed to their employees or not having a long-term vision for their employees, is it any surprise that you then have that short-term vision yourself? You know, he probably went into that job knowing the previous three managers, by March, we all knew they were getting the sack. Mm-hmm. So in the back of his head, he's like, well, maybe it's a chance to jump earlier than I thought the next season. I think Watford's model and what they've done over the past few years has shown they're not necessarily looking for a manager to be there for 3-4 years. So can we be surprised that he was already looking for a way out?
And Greg, is that the problem now Watford now have? Because any manager they now get, even if that manager does really, really well, they might find that that manager wants to jump before being pushed, because they know the previous four out of the five managers they've had have all been sacked, and all been sacked fairly soon. You go into Watford now and you know that you're not going to be there long term. So rather than wait to be pushed, sorry, kicked out, you just think, you know what? If I'm doing well now and Everton job comes up, or big job, I'm going to jump and leave. And there's no loyalty there anymore because you've shown that you're not loyal.
But it was meant to be different with Silva. I think they appointed Silva because they saw this guy who could they could take them to the next step, and they were going to commit to him, and he was going to commit to them, and it was all going to be hunky-dory. I mean, they bought the players in the summer. They brought interesting guys in. I really rate Silva. I think even throughout this like implosion at Watford, I don't think you can question his tactics or his coaching, because that's not what destroyed it. As Mike said, like, people just lost faith in him because he showed a lack of faith in the job and his role. And the other thing with Silva is you look at his CV and everywhere he's been, there was that story of he got sacked by one of the Portuguese clubs, so he refused to wear a club's blazer. Mm-hmm. Everywhere he's gone, all these kind of controversial sackings or early departures or interruptions, in isolation you can go, oh, that's a shame, that didn't happen. But it's followed him around everywhere. Most of the clubs he's been at, it's ended in some kind of controversy or some kind of weird ending. Mm-hmm. If it keeps happening to a guy, maybe that wasn't the problem. Maybe he's the problem.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with Mike. I think he made his own bed, really, and he's lied in it, because what did he expect to happen? I don't understand what he's doing. He was onto such a great thing, and I agree. The football they were playing was incredible. I was there at the start of the season when they played Liverpool, and the way they came back, the way they attacked them, the way they were so like direct yet really intelligent with how they transitioned as well. Mm-hmm. I thought they were fantastic. They were actually like my dark horse team for the season to do amazing things. And he screwed the pooch, I guess is the expression, didn't he?
Joel, where does this leave Marco Silva? Because he was, as Greg says, this guy that people were looking at as the next big, maybe Pochettino. He was the next young, innovative, exciting manager from the continent. Do you think now teams will start thinking, oh, hang on a minute, he's had a relegation and now been sacked within a year. Maybe this guy actually isn't that good. Or do you think people have seen enough to think Everton might come back for him in the summer if Big Sam doesn't do a thing?
Who have Watford appointed as
Garcia?
Like, and what's his CV saying?
Apparently, at the level that he was managing at, he was doing a decent-ish job.
But that's my point. I'm bringing that to I say that to say this. His CV means, Silver CV means that he'll get another job.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know I mean, he'll be all right. There's a merry-go-round of jobs out there for him.
There's talk of Southampton already, isn't there?
And he'll get a job.
He's got the character for Southampton, I think. No, because I think
part But they haven't got the players, so he won't take that job.
I think part of the problem with the current manager is that he doesn't have any character. It was Puel's problem as well. He's boring, he's not enticing to the fans.
I mean, I don't think Southampton ain't got no players. He took the Watford job because they're London, essentially, right? And after Hull, he learned, I'm not going to do that again. Take a club out there. It could be a Premier League club. I'll probably have to think twice about it. Took this job and he was doing all the right things. And the club had his back. I'm told by players who work with a personal trainer of mine that he wasn't that great tactically. He was able to galvanise the dressing room.
Okay.
And he was able to get people to buy into his vision. And that's what he was good at. And that, I think that's what was translated on the pitch. You know, and
some of the results, despite him being this great manager, aren't great.
No, no, they're not.
I think the home record I think
he was punching above his weight for the first 9-10 games of the season, and they were playing some better football than they had done in previous seasons, and those managers have done all right as well. So, excuse me. I think with Silva, he should have knew that he didn't have the skill set to get that dressing room to reinvest into his vision once Everton had turned him down.
Mm.
Once Everton had moved on from him, he should have knew that there was no way he was going to... He lost his captain. His captain started doing all sorts. You know, and I think that... That just went throughout the whole team.
Do you think that's part of the problem with Watford, Mike, as a Watford fan, is that Deeney has this...
A lot of power there, doesn't he?
Yeah, basically a lot of power, I was thinking of another word. But in an unhealthy amount of power he seems to have within the squad and within the team. Do you think that is part of the problem for any manager coming in?
I don't think it's part of this season's problem. And I'll definitely talk about Troy, just to touch on Silva's tactical sort of ability. I can't stress enough how poor the showings have been over the last 10, 11, 12 games. We've been completely rolled over by teams like Burnley, by Swansea, by Huddersfield, by Crystal Palace. That can't happen if you're going to stay in the Premier League. That can't happen if you're a head coach with aspirations for coaching the top teams in the land. Yes, we're down to the bare bones in terms of injuries, but he's shown absolutely no sign of being able to get a tune out of the players for the last 10, 12 games. With Silva in charge, there was absolutely no doubt in my mind that they were going to get relegated. So to go back to the earlier question about how tactically adept he is and whether he is the real deal, I think there are enormous question marks over him for me. And I think you were hit on a great point in terms of his personality. I think he is quite a prickly character, and I think he does have some idiosyncrasies that mean he probably will rub boards up the wrong way and he'll fall out with players. So I think Marco's got a problem now. As for Troy, it's a really difficult one, and I think it's you're right to bring him up because he is a larger than life character. He's done incredibly well for Watford over the years. He's helped get us promoted. He's up until this season, really, he's been pretty consistent in front of goal, which he made the transition from the Championship to the Premier League pretty comfortably, which I don't think many people expected, Watford supporters included, to be fair.
Oh, there was a shout for him to play for England at one point, you know.
So, couple of shouts.
Yeah.
And what he does do, when he's on his game, he will drag your team kicking and screaming back into contention. The Arsenal game was a fantastic example of what he can do to a team that's playing well. You know, Watford were in the game.
It was also an example
of
how
he changed that, but he really showed his the benefit he can bring to the team against Southampton at home, which was the last home game before Silva was dismissed. Watford were 2-0 down and were heading for a hiding. He came on at half time, and not only did the game change, but the atmosphere changed inside the ground. The fans could see something happening on the pitch, so they got behind them, and Southampton all of a sudden were there for the taking, and that was pretty much solely down to the introduction of Troy Deeney. you're right, he does seem to have a lot of influence at the club. He is larger than life. He is, you know, he's been the club captain. How much he impacts behind the scenes, I'm not sure, because as we know, that the personnel does change fairly frequently in terms of head coach. So I don't care who you are, you're going to have to impress the head coach again when they come in. You're going to have to do it all over again. You're going to have to audition, if you like. But the important thing, I think, is it's been very transitional at Watford. There've been a lot of changes, and whilst they're still great, I think that the Pozzos and Scott Duxbury need credit for keeping Watford as a community club. They still understand their role in the local community. But that link between players and supporters, which historically has been there because we've been a smaller club and it's been easier to maintain, they're quite transient these days. Most players, as you said earlier, as with head coaches, are coming to Watford using it as a stepping stone. They're looking to get elsewhere. You look at Richarlison, he's not coming to spend his career 15 years at Watford. He's looking to shine on Match of the Day, get picked up by a Champions League club. We know that. So we'll enjoy them while they're here, but we still need, we're all football supporters, we still need those players that we can sort of hang our hat on, that we can sort of relate to a little bit. And Troy's one of those. He's, you know, he was a bricklayer. He got his break at Walsall and then he got his break at Watford. And like him or loathe him, he's a real guy. And he's kind of one of us. So I think the danger Watford have got is just that they lose Troy Deeney, they lose a link between the supporters and the on-field players. So it's tightly knit at Watford, as you know. It's and they need the supporters. So I think it's dangerous. It's dangerous to get rid of Troy. I suspect that the time is probably right for him to move on in terms of his career. And he may well be looking for a move either now or at the end of the season. But for me, he's still an incredibly important player.
Brilliant, Mike. Where can people find your podcast?
If you haven't heard enough of my waffle already, you can hear us on From the Rookery End. It comes out every Monday. So you download it from all the usual places. And we're on Twitter at Watford Podcast. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram too. But yeah, give it a listen. We've got a good interview in the most recent one with David Garrido from Sky Sports. He runs gives us a bit of the lowdown on the new boss. So that's worth a listen.
Mike, you're the man. Thank you very much for coming on the FFP, man.
Good luck, mate.
Bye.
Thanks for having us, Gary.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Let's move on now to our next topic of the pod, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Jose, because we've not bashed Jose for at least a month on the podcast.
I'm not bashing Jose.
I know, that's why I've got you on.
I know.
That's why you got me on today, isn't it?
Yeah. United, let's talk about Man United, currently second in the Premier League. And I want to ask, and I'll start with the United fan, this one, Greg. What do you think is preventing Manchester United from winning the biggest trophies and titles over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, Pep Guardiola or Jose Mourinho?
Well, I mean, it was Pep Guardiola for that question. if you take him out of the equation, then City might not be the force they are, which means United go top.
So you think the only thing basically stopping you from winning Prem's next 2 or 3 years is Pep Guardiola?
Wow. The question was, is it Pep or is it Jose? If you're going to do that dichotomy, it's Pep. Because take Pep out of the equation.
Yep. United, you know what I'm getting to.
I know you're getting at. But I think you United are following the pattern of how I think all Jose projects go. Mm-hmm. And they should be peaking around now, or if not, like in the next few months. And they've just got Alexis Sanchez, which just got confirmed before we went on air. If Pep wasn't there and City weren't the monster that they are, United would probably be on a good way to challenging, if not winning, the title. Champions League is a different kettle of fish, but then I think the Premier League is in a low moment. Mm-hmm. When it comes to European football, so that's a bigger battle than one man at one club can really battle. Although we'll see with Guardiola at City, that might change. Mm-hmm. I think there are issues in terms of whether the pattern's going to continue as it did at Chelsea and I would say at Real Madrid. Some people would dispute that, where you do get burnout, you do get this kind of like mental attritional kind of fatigue with Mourinho. And a bit like we were talking about with Marco Silva a bit earlier on, I think the intensity that Mourinho demands from players and that the kind of rigid discipline, mm-hmm, and role playing he demands, I think there is a shelf life to it, and that's why whether it's the third or the fourth season, he ends up turning to the owner going, I need you to buy me a new squad. And the owner goes, well, it's cheaper to sack you, so we'll do that. I think that is fundamentally the problem, and that's a problem he's going to have to overcome at United. And I think United are almost like a return to the challenge you face at Real Madrid, where these are two clubs where they're clearly... They've got an established history. They're the biggest clubs in the world, depending on who you ask. Whereas you compare what he did at Inter, Chelsea, Porto, in various ways, they were all challenger clubs. Okay, Porto were the biggest club in Portugal, but they're not the biggest club in Europe. That's why it suited him to be an underdog in that sense. Chelsea, flush with cash, but you know they were trying to become the next big dominant force in the Premier League. Because that's another kind of back foot that he can launch himself from. Inter, they were historically massive underachievers, so again, suits him down to the ground. I think that a place like Real Madrid and Man United, his kind of mythology that he projects around himself is never going to overcome the established kind of history and sense of kind of presence that's around these clubs. And eventually, as we saw at Real Madrid, it sends him a bit west. I think the Mourinho that returned to England after he'd been in Spain was, you know, the mischief had gone. I think the fun factor that Mourinho had at Chelsea, and okay, he could also be incredibly controversial, a lot of people hated him there, there was still almost like a knowing wink to a lot of the stuff he did first time at Chelsea. A mischievousness, I'd say, is probably the best way to call it. Whereas now he's back in England, he's looked like a broken man sometimes. He's been even quicker at turning bitter and, you know, just
miserable or just angry, but not fun angry.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, as much as you hated it, I'm sure. But when he said Arsene Wenger's a voyeur, like that was too far, but too far in a way he went. That's quite. But then when he was at Chelsea and Rafa Benitez's wife said something, he didn't find like a funny way around it. He just went straight for the throat, as in like.
He basically said his wife should sit at home and be tied to the kitchen.
It just he seemed like a guy who like lost all patience. Like he was impatient for success, for everything. There was an unhappiness to him. Okay, we found out later that his father was very ill as well, which maybe didn't help, but, you know. But still.
Just give him a break.
We have to give him a break, but he also doesn't help himself. You know what I mean? He also sets himself up into these big media narratives, which he's made his USP. Like, we're talking about Silva, the kind of unity in the dressing room was a big thing for him. I think Pep Guardiola said he's the king of the press room, whether he's the king outside the 90 minutes or something. I think that's even true now. I think he saw Conte off in their recent like kind of press to and fro. And
I think Conte just won that one because if you need to get personal, you're not winning. If
you need to get personal,
Mourinho gets personal and knows how to keep it.
But Fergie and Wenger, when they used to go at each other, they were smart about it. Like, Fergie would praise his team. Wenger's like, everyone thinks they have the prettiest
wife at home. But Mourinho doesn't want to be smart. He knows that level. He gets you down to the level, then he beats you. Well, of course he is. But he doesn't care.
I've been hearing the last few months, Tasha, that, you know, United in any other season, they'll be winning this league. It's only because of what City are doing, it makes United look bad.
You say that so nonchalantly.
And I'll tell you why, and I want to get your input. I know you love Jose Mourinho as well. I'm not so sure if that's true, because while there's no shame in being second to Manchester City and Pep Guardiola,
this Manchester City,
there is shame in being 12, 15 points behind Manchester City. Manchester City being great had nothing to do with United losing at Huddersfield, had nothing to do with United drawing at Liverpool. So I'm not sure I agree with this idea that United in any other year would be flying.
I agree
with
you.
Which side of the fence do you sit on?
It's not like
City have only lost one game.
Listen, they're doing great things. I'm not saying United should be top. But there shouldn't be 12 points behind, is my point. They shouldn't be out of the race at Christmas.
People are making it like City and United are playing each other 15 times, and that's why they're second. They're not. United are playing the same teams that City are playing. You know, you can't defend the fact they're that far behind and still say they would be winning it in another season. Because when he closes up shop against, was it Liverpool, when they got the draw? What's that got to do with Pep Guardiola? That's got nothing to do with Pep. That's Jose.
No, but
when he restricts his team, doesn't allow them to go forward, goes 1-0 up and decides like we're gonna shut up shop, that's nothing to do with Pep.
No, but it is, because the point is that would be enough if City weren't City. because they would still be
world,
top.
But
having recognised what City are doing, you have to adapt
goal difference.
And realise that a point at Liverpool isn't a good point anymore.
But you only adapt if you've got the resources. You don't pretend.
Hold on,
the resources. So who does he replace him with? Just out of interest.
Martial.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Straight through the middle. Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Hold on. Straight through the
Marcus
middle.
Rashford.
Hold on. Straight through the middle.
Yes. Rashford.
Who else has done that? Who
Ibrahimovic is on £375,000 a week.
To be a striker.
No.
And that's why they bought Alexis, because it didn't work. Right? You made a decision to keep Ibra.
That's not resources,
though. Hold on.
What kind of foolish decision was that? That's like me. That's like going to the supermarket. The meat goes off tomorrow and you pay full price and don't get a discount. He was injured at the start of the season. You were only ever going to get maybe 15 Premier League games out of him, and then plus 10
But
you kept him on rather than give your younger players the experience they need to enable them to make a positive.
I'm not playing
Martial.
I don't think anybody on this table is playing Martial or Rashford through the centre as the first striker.
I think Martial is better through the middle personally.
I don't think Martial.
So your point that basically he's trailing Pep Guardiola. Because his resources are lesser.
So he didn't spend his money well enough.
Don't put words in my mouth.
No, that was a question.
You know what I mean? Because I clearly made you understand.
It's a
question. No, he's not. He's not, to answer the question.
What are you saying?
Yeah, okay. Man City are playing extraordinarily well. That's why they're trailing Man City. They've drawn too many games. That's the bottom line for me.
And whose fault is that?
I'm saying they've drawn too many games, Jordan. It's not about whose fault it is.
That's football.
You know, hold on. The reason I said that. Hold on.
Finish your point.
Two seasons ago, Tottenham were firing, man. But we finished. We started with about eight draws, and finished second in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
Third, actually, just behind Arsenal.
Yeah.
So whose fault was that? Pochettino's, why we drew all those games. It doesn't go like that, Jordan. Sometimes you draw games. That's how football is.
But you just made the point, you drew a lot of
games.
No,
I'm saying
After a while, it becomes less unlucky and there's something going wrong. When you're drawing that many games, something is wrong.
They've drawn five games this year.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why there's so many points off of City, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you have to recognise that what Pep's doing is working for him. So what Jose's got to do is adjust and realise that I can't go to Anfield and take a point. 5 years ago, a point at Anfield might have been good. Yeah, now, the game's changed.
Yeah, but he can't, Jordan, he can't lose that game. So what I'm saying to you is that if we want
to
look at that game, who is he adjusting with? Because I'm saying, if the striker weren't firing, who is he adjusting with, Jordan? Let's not pick imaginary players
Who was the team on form in that game? Going into that game,
my thing between Liverpool and Man United is anything could happen in that game. We all know that.
Yeah, but Liverpool were on the ropes.
Did you expect Liverpool to beat Man City last week?
I predicted the City win.
Did you expect Liverpool to win? That's my question.
My dad actually did, and I was like, "You don't know what you're talking about."
I think I spoke to about two people that expected them to win. But guess what? Because Liverpool are playing well, everybody said they could cause a problem.
But Liverpool had that game on form. But the United game, they were not on form.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there.
I still didn't expect
them to win the game, form or not. Man City have been playing much better than Liverpool, bruv. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you expect City to go there and do what they've done to everybody else.
So is Jose doing the best he can do?
I think if he had other options, and which is why he's brought in Alexis in the transfer window, if he had other options, I don't think it would be as bad as it is at the moment.
And
personally, remember I've said this on your show before as well. Chelsea won 13 games on the spin last year,
mm-hmm.
and that was what won them the league.
Mm-hmm.
Man City won 18 on the bounce. I bet you that's what wins them the league.
I don't think Jose's failing because he's second. I think Jose's failing because he's second by 12 points.
And my thing is this.
And because 12
points?
Hold on.
But 12 points? What's that?
Four games.
Right. So.
So, what are
we saying? What are we saying? Remember I said they've drawn five, you know?
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that they shouldn't have drawn those five.
I'm saying,
and they should be trying with City, who have played better than everybody else, better than any other City team ever.
But I think there's an argument to suggest that in those five draws, if he'd have tried to win those games, he might have won some of those draws.
He might have lost them as well, Jordan.
Of course, but at least try and win the games. No, give yourself a chance, Jordan.
Because the season,
having seen, because it's 38 games in the season, Jordan. I agree, but
not two, not five, but Joel.
The way City started the season, you have to understand that draws are no good this year. They're no good this year.
Biggest club in the Premier League, yeah. Then on average, they may lose one of those games by going to win it. But out of five games, they're likely to win four of those.
Do you know what?
So it's worth taking the risk and gaining those extra
points. Take the risk with who? The striker stopped firing.
I'm talking about who's playing on the pitch. I'm saying, why are you setting your team up for a draw?
Have got at least three or four strikers.
I don't believe they're good enough. I'm like Jose. I don't believe they're good enough.
I think we're falling into the same trap that Mourinho pushes, that we're talking about the individuals, whereas clearly with City, it's not just about the individuals, it's about the system as well. Yeah. And you said earlier, like, oh, why can't Mourinho adapt to Pep? Well, to be fair to Mourinho, it's not adapt to Pep, but adapt to...
What he was doing clearly wasn't working, hence the draws that Joel brings up. So change something.
But it has been working for years. Mourinho is one of the most successful managers in the history of football.
Let me finish.
So Mourinho, he's from the same era where him and Rafa Benitez were like two of the creme de la creme managers of the time. They are from an era where it's all about the shape, all about nullifying your opponent's strengths, all about basically winning the match by preparing and basically being like a siege engineer almost. The offside law got liberalised, Pep Guardiola rised up with Barcelona, possession football came in, now we're in this like weird gegenpressing transition thing, or maybe we even post that now. It's not about how to stifle your opponents now, it's how to beat your opponents. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, Mourinho's past it. He's not past it completely, but his excellence is from a slightly different era, and it can still clearly compete. He's second in the Premier League. But when you say he needs to adapt to this new reality, maybe he can't. Not everyone can. It's like taking like a shark to like the ocean and go be a tiger now. You can't. They're two different like modes of completely. Like one's wet, one's on the land. I've lost track of this.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's philosophies is essentially what you're talking about, right? That's exactly
bring back Louis van Gaal. Yeah, I'm joking.
I'll bring back. Pep hasn't won the league yet. You know, when he wins the league, then we can turn around and look at what his achievements have been like and how he did it. You know what I mean? And why, and all the teams that finished beneath them, because I told you on this show as well,
they've all failed.
We're only a couple of seasons past Leicester winning the title when everybody had to look at themselves, right? And there was a lull in the quality of the league. That's why Tottenham punched above their weight and finished third and then second. And now we're looking at Tottenham. They're probably where they're supposed to be given what's been spent. The teams are, everybody stepped up.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I just see as Man City had a plan, bring in Pep. Pep came in, took a season to work it out.
Mm.
Everybody was... The first 10 games last season were outstanding. And guess what? People started knocking long balls.
Mm.
What did he do this year? He bought Kyle Walker, 50 mil. Used to spend 50 mil on Lacazette. Shows you the priorities. You understand what I'm saying? And said, this is how we're going to stop that from happening. It stopped it from happening.
Mm.
This season...
But he hasn't been more cautious. He's played exactly the same way, but he knows
he's got Kyle Walker because they can't play out with Tottenham no more.
What the difference there is, you said he had a plan and he came with a plan. He's built to a plan.
That's right.
I'm not saying it's to be critical of Mourinho because, again, Mourinho, for me, he's someone who sets up to stifle the opposition first rather than think about his plan A.
Mm.
His plan A is to think about the opposition's plan A, how to stop it. Mm. I still don't look at Mourinho's Man United and think there's a plan there. The plan is to win at all costs, but I think these days that's quite limiting in a weird way because you don't win at all costs anymore. You have like almost like a USP for what you want your team to be,
mm-hmm.
and you focus yourself on being the purest kind of vision for what that is. Klopp's doing it at Liverpool. I think Poch's doing it at Spurs. I think Pep's doing it at City. I actually think Conte's doing it at Chelsea. Conte, people call it defensive. I don't think it's defensive. It's so balanced.
Mm.
Last season, the way they could just turn from defence to attack. It's structured. Conte talks about automations. That's how he talks about it. Mourinho doesn't do that. Mourinho's the opposite. It's almost Wenger-esque in a way, isn't he? Leaves it up to the intuition and the kind of improvisational ability of the individual, especially when they attack. Mourinho is all about making sure his defensive third is set up completely. Mm. But Pep's thinking not just the defensive third, the middle third, he's thinking about the whole pitch.
Mm.
And so are players, so are managers like Pochettino.
So if we're going to use run with Greg's analogy of Jose being, you know, the shark that's now on land and can't / won't change, Tasha, how concerning should that be for United and United fans? Because if he can't or won't change, there's going to be no big titles coming United's way in the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, this probably cut me to say this, but as an Arsenal fan, as having watched someone not change for several years, I can tell you it's not very pretty, and the United fans won't stand for it. It's not what they expect from their club historically, or even in more recent years. And I suppose as long as you're 10, then you remember Man U being successful. I think part of the problem with Jose is...
Shots.
No, that wasn't all about shots.
There was a silence
on it. The shade over there.
Anyway, go on.
Oh, my God. I'm being nice today. Part of the problem with Jose is he makes too many excuses. We can talk about playing to win or taking the risk and getting the draw. City the other day, even when they were 4-0 down, 4-1 down, was it, against Liverpool? I still felt like they could come back and win it. And this is the difference between City and United. If United go down, you're not sure they're going to be able to come back and win it. Whether that's the personnel on the pitch or whether that's what the manager's teaching them, you know, that kind of apprehension and lack of confidence within the team should come from the manager first and foremost. Greg talking about Jose letting his forward players do their thing, that's all well and good, but he's very quick to chastise them if their thing doesn't work.
And you rely on individuals, whereas if you rely on a system, there's more of like a kind of a level you can drop back to.
I think Jose is a bigger problem to Man United winning titles than Pep is, in my personal opinion, because from what I can see, Pep's just going about his business. Jose is more interested in Pep.
As much as I'm a critic of Mourinho, if Pep wasn't doing his business,
obviously he's talking about him, but Pep's team is winning, so it doesn't matter what he says.
Let me ask you both. If Pochettino was at United, would they have a better chance of winning a big title?
No, because Pep's at City.
So basically, as long as Pep's in this league,
I'm going to disagree.
You can't see anyone
from
the Premier League title.
So we said earlier,
Pochettino, who ain't won nothing, do better than.
No, if
I'm just asking questions. I know.
We said before, Mourinho's got this pattern of how he approaches all his jobs, and they all tend to end the same. I would say same with Pep, but this isn't. It is unprecedented in the Premier League, but it's not unprecedented with Pep. This is what he does. He goes to a club, he gets massive backing to build his vision of how he's basically like this.
Got a philosophy.
He's got a philosophy. He's just figured out players.
I saw an interview with Carl Walker the other day. I was really, really impressed. And he said one of the reasons
Walker.
Still bitter.
And he was saying the reason he went to City was because Pep managed his two favourite players in his position, which was Lahm and Alves from Barca. And he said, every day is a school day playing under Pep. That to me says it all.
So it wasn't under Poch, now? Because you got better under Poch. Just saying. Just throwing that in the mix.
Tottenham's next week.
You need to take yourself... Whatever you do in life, you want to take yourself to the next level. And with the greatest respect to Tottenham, they are not in a position where they're going to go out and win the Champions League this season. So Walker's taken that decision to move to a club that is more likely to win the Champions League.
It's like
the bookies are telling me.
You sit Lewis Hamilton in a Skoda and he's not going to win the Formula 1, is he?
He's going to move to a Mercedes. He's going to go in a Porsche.
A Formula 1 driver drives a Formula 1 car because he's going to get the most out of it. You stick me in a Formula 1 car, it's not going to happen. You know, you're going to put the best driver in the best car. And that's what happens with Pep at these clubs, because he goes to the clubs with the best budget, the best players, with the vision to play his football. Okay, people can laugh and say, well, you can't do it with a non-league team.
You have to make the players believe in it. And
you've got to invest in making it happen as well.
There's a really good article in The Guardian by Jonathan Wilson, and it talks about Jose creating a kind of cult within his club. Pep teaches. He teaches someone how to fish.
There's a
cult around both.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm just saying that specific article said. But Pep is teaching his players. So he's teaching them how to fish so they can go fish for themselves.
Yeah, but
Jose is fishing and feeding them. So therefore, they stop making the decisions for themselves. And when they start to think, they don't know what to do. And this is why he ends up with a team of players who start to trail off,
I'm saying
he's not coming to Tottenham, John.
No, because we ain't got the money for him.
Just say it about one step. This is what I found.
A couple of jobs ago, we might have got
him. You're pushing it. I admit, the football got really bad under Van Gaal, but this is what I find quite frustrating about his reign. In the Van Gaal got all this, his whole thing, he was going to set this philosophy, whatever you call it. He wanted to take the intuition off the footballers and build the system, and then say, then you can start thinking for yourself once you've kind of taken on this like way of playing collectively. I think that does jar with the United ethos, though, in a way. So I can sympathise with why.
Can you imagine someone saying to Ryan Giggs, "I'm going to tell you how to think"?
Well, I think someone does.
You know, in that, no,
I think we're really
in that semi-final.
Let me move it forwards. Joel, yeah. A lot of people that I've spoken to have brought up the money thing. Yeah. They've said that City has spent crazy money.
Yeah.
That's why they're so far ahead of United and everybody else. So I've got some stats here that kind of quantifies what they've spent compared to United. So Pep at City, in comparison to United's Jose's time at United, I've got here that Mourinho has spent a total of 314 million.
Mm.
While he's been at United, Pep has spent a total of where is it? 411 million. So it's about 100 million more. Is that a justifiable reason as to why Pep is so far ahead of Jose?
I don't like to look at the money like that, but I mean, it helps, doesn't it? You know, if you can buy Carl Walker for 50 mil, knowing that you've bought Stones a couple of years ago.
But United could buy it. United could do that as well.
Sorry?
United could do that as well.
I'm not saying they can't do it, but maybe we're looking at who spent the money better. I don't know. I don't really like to look at the money per se. I more like to look at the journey. And I'd like to see, I like to see teams evolve. And I think that's what Pep's done. He's got there, and even though they've got the money, the resources, and a good team, and a good base, and he can throw more money and go and get another player. That's just how it is, isn't it? That's where he wanted to be. So I don't really look at that no more, to be honest with you. I'm more looking at the fact that he's got that team playing as well as he has, you know, and the football is sublime. And he's sticking to his philosophy.
Is the football sublime, Joel? What, really?
City.
I was going to say.
You know what it is? I think in any division across the board, right, we're going to give more props to the team that's playing attacking football than we're going to give to the team that's playing not so attacking football or defensive football. We're always going to give more props to the team.
But I don't think people would mind so much, especially Man United fans, if they were playing defensive football, if they were top.
But hang on.
If it was working.
Who says Man United fans are bothered? Because like,
I know a lot of United fans that are like, this is not what we signed up for.
Yeah, but on
I think you
look at the mainstream, and I think a lot of United fans, and I'm not trying to diss him here, but they've bought into the court of Mourinho. They're chewing up the excuses and going, yeah, fair play.
But
it's the same. Even at Chelsea, there was a kind of a resistance underneath the surface. Yeah, there was.
He gets
the large majority of the fans to buy into his kind of conspiratorial kind of worldview on how the game works and all the rest of it.
Literally, he is the king of transference.
But what I was going to say you can't knock him for it, because in the way, again, we were saying with Marcus Silva's got his kind of thing that he's great at, Pep's got his thing. Mourinho's brilliant at it. You've got to give him credit. Like, there's these stories, I think it was in the Jonathan Wilson piece again, during his training in Portugal, he studied psychology. This isn't just him fluking. Like,
no.
This is like a serious kind of campaign he does. It's proper
so
mind war. Yeah, it's incredible. It really is.
Now, guys.
And he said that himself.
Let me move forward. Alexis Sanchez has been announced, as you mentioned earlier on, Greg, as a United player in the straight swap with Mkhitaryan, who will be going to sign for Arsenal. Tasha, why do you think Sanchez decided to leave in this window, and was United the right move?
Better than
because he's impatient, and I don't think United. I didn't hear what Joel said.
No, don't. It's not even important. Just carry on.
So much trophies.
Just carry on.
Please,
don't
why Arlene even have any trophies?
Don't even listen.
2008, yeah.
The Worthington Cup, was it? Sorry.
Don't diss it, because that's all you're in this year. That's all you can win this year.
They're going to have the North London Capacity Shield soon. It's
going to be. I think impatience is why he left this window.
Not Wenger's attitude to contracts.
Even though he could have got, in theory, more money if he'd have left in the summer.
Which is, it's obviously not in money, then it's impatience, isn't it? It's I don't want to be here. It's like me putting my coat on and saying, boy, I'm ducking out.
Mm.
And no, I don't think it's the right move for him. While I do feel like at City, there's so much competition for him, I'm not sure where he would have fit in.
Yeah.
But at the same point, I don't see him and Jose kind of having a long, flourishing relationship.
Why not?
He's 29. They only give you
when they got. Isn't that the good age for Jose?
When
players?
They renew their contract, it is. Yeah. He's better off at United than he is at City.
Why?
Because he'll play. You know what I mean? He'll play in a number of positions, and at City, I think they've got them positions locked down. Unless he was going to get rid of Aguero at the end of the year, which is what it looked like. Yeah, man, I think he'll get great opportunities at United, and he could even be a bigger star at United, because if what we're going by what you're saying, Jordan, City look like they're going to dominate for the next few years.
Well, I was going to have to move on to Greg. Mm. What does it say about Sanchez that he has decided to go to United, who we've kind of all agreed are going to play second fiddle more than likely to City in the next couple of years, rather than go to City where he's worked with Pep.
He wants to be the big man.
He's going
to
get a Premier League title, maybe more this year.
Yeah.
He's decided to go to United. Does that look good on him? The challenge of maybe trying to reinvigorate and that challenge of trying to take on City?
A few things.
Or just money?
So a few things on that. This he's going to be reunited with Pep. His peak didn't come under Pep, and Pep's peak didn't come with Sanchez. Like, true, they didn't true. Really... compared to what he did at Barcelona, Pep actually had a pretty fallow period when he was managing Sanchez. It didn't quite work. And it didn't work for the same reasons why it could work for Mourinho, in that this guy is obsessed to the point of ridiculousness. And I don't mean in terms of a positive thing. That can also be a very bad thing. Mm. You've seen it on the pitch for Arsenal. Mm. He can take too much on himself. He can lose the ball because he's just trying to do too much at times. Sulking as well, because he's so me about he wants a certain standard and the rest of it, which, in different clubs that might be seen as a role model thing to rally around, but clearly it didn't mesh with the ethos in the Arsenal dressing room. But then even look when he's injured, he trains when he's injured. There's a story of the Arsenal coaching staff finding him running up and down stairs with weights on his legs while after he pulled a tendon. He'd be like, what are you doing? You're gonna be in a wheelchair when you're 40 and you're just want to play. It's okay.
But that's why I think he pushed for so much money in this contract. That's why
it's the last big one.
Yeah, it's the last big
one. Yeah, definitely.
When you got to Arsenal, you had Santi Cazorla and you had a few players, and he came in and he had a look, played his game, turned around and said, well, hold on, what's happening here? You sort of got ability. Come on.
Let's do this, isn't it?
I'm going to go Chile. I'm coming back. And I'm walking straight into this team, and we're going to do it again. No one stepped up with him, apart from Santi. Got injured. And it was a wrap for you, son. Mm.
But this is why it's so perfect swapping him for Mkhitaryan, because Sanchez has got the Mourinho mentality in terms of he's just obsessed. And you're right, he's 29. He ticks all the boxes of a Mourinho player. Not only does he get one over on Wenger and Pep, which clearly is going to tick a box for Mourinho.
Does he get one over on Pep when Pep said, it's all right, you have him?
Well, this
that's
was,
not no, getting no, one over. Because he gets the player.
Is this Jose getting one over Pep, or is this more Pep saying, you know what? I don't even need you, you know.
I tell you what, if I come up to you and say, here, have my £1 dinner money because I don't want it, that's not you bullying me. You bullying me is you taking it. So as far as I'm concerned, Pep said the plate. It's all right, Jose, I'm finished with the food, you can have it.
You're dressing it up. It was two Manchester clubs going at it. One got the play and
but
one
City
didn't.
Said well, one first, City out. Said well, this didn't get his
player, mate.
No, they
didn't get the player.
United only got Sanchez because City pulled out.
Yes.
The United didn't beat City.
If they both went with the same contract, do United get him?
Please,
I don't think you could play that game, because we don't know what was offered, to be fair. But we know that it wasn't a case of Sanchez choosing one club took their bid away.
I'm giving the high.
Yeah, what I'm saying, we don't know what City were prepared to offer, is what I'm saying.
If it was the same as what United were prepared to offer,
Joel, on the idea of being the star, as we've said, City are a collective force.
He wants to be
a big fish. And plus also the star at City is De Bruyne, and it's probably going to be Sterling as well, because he's got the massive UK English thing. We all know that's a massive thing on PR and getting the branding and all the rest of it. So I don't think he's quite going to get there. Plus he's older than those guys as well, so he's not going to have the lifespan and all that. But United, he's already got the 7 shirt. We've seen the video of him being announced while he's playing Glory Goal Man United on piano. It's so glitz glam Hollywood, it's ridiculous. It's very Glazer era Man United, and it's playing up to this big Galactico thing.
He wants to be the big fish.
He's got the number 7 shirt of George Best, Eric Cantona, David Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo,
Di Maria,
Depay.
Di Maria was a good player under a wrong manager, which maybe is what you say. Di Maria under Jose Mourinho, anyway. I think that it's in many ways he's the. I said on Twitter. He's going to be the defining signing of the Jose Mourinho period at Man United, or maybe the early Jose Mourinho period if he lasts. Because, like I say, he's such a Mourinho player. But his negative flip sides are also quite similar to Jose's negative flip sides, in that they can just go too far sometimes, and they don't know down to the channel
themselves. Instructions is going to be a problem.
But that we said before the pod started, Inter, he kind of let Schneider get away with that at Real Madrid. Okay, Ozil had he had a job to do, but he was still quite a floaty job. He could get about a bit. I think Gabriel Marcotti said this on Twitter as well, because we were talking about how it's all going to fit together. Like, if you're going to sign Perisic, you'll fit him into the system or fit into the team, whatever we're going to talk about. You sign Sanchez, you might put a new formation out. Imagine a team where United's only go to 3-4-3 and you've got Martial and Sanchez behind Lukaku. That attack is going to scare anyone. Luke Shaw's coming back. You've got Valencia, who's already a wing back. That could work. Mm. He's such a good player that you could see Mourinho go, I'm going to do a different formation. And again, he did that into Milan. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mourinho isn't wedded to one formation. We've seen it throughout his career. He won't flip and change and do all the kind of proactive stuff that Pep does. As you said earlier, it's about the individuals. Mm-hmm. And if he's got the individuals, he will make the game plan so that we'll defend and then the individuals take on from where I can't coach, basically. And I think that's what we'll see from Mourinho.
In a word, will Sanchez be a success at United?
Yes.
Tasha? One word.
Gritted teeth. Gritted teeth.
Because he's thinking of a sentence. A one word.
Possibly.
And no possibly. Yes or no?
Maybe.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yes.
Okay.
Qualified cool. Success. Sorry, I've had more words. More words.
One word, Greg. One word.
Oh, no.
Right, let's move on now to our next one, guys. I want to talk about VAR, or VAR as it's now been shortened to. To do so, I'm going to add to the panel our regular fan and also qualified referee, Mike. How you doing, sir?
How's it going, man? You okay?
We're all good. We're all good, mate. We're all good. I will start with you on this question. I want to ask, will the positives outweigh the negatives?
Why would you ask me that straight away?
Straight in, Mike. Straight in.
Straight into the deep end. Deep end. Ease me in.
First of all, are you a fan of it?
Do you know what? I'm a fan of getting help for referees. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
The VAR, I feel it's going to be very difficult to implement in England.
Why?
Going back to the Chelsea Norwich game.
Mm.
What you need to understand is refereeing is a fraternity to a certain extent. Here's me admitted this as a referee. I mean, I call out referees when they do something wrong. And when I saw that Chelsea versus Norwich game, he is like, the VAR was there to be used and he didn't want to use it. And nobody's calling him and saying, you've made a mistake. I'm referring to the Willian incident. That was a penalty for me.
Mm.
And the VAR should have been used. So he can look back and say, okay. Rather than booking him straight away, because he didn't even refer to the VAR at all.
But even if in his mind, that he is adamant it wasn't a penalty, my question then is, why would he then ask for a review? He was clearly wrong. Well, he was wrong in most people's view. But if in his mind, I'm right, well, I know I'm right. So why am I going to ask for a review? You only go to review shortly if you think there's doubt.
I feel in England, it's not going to work. Because in England, I feel like there's a sense of pride in refereeing. There's a sense of an ego in refereeing.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are sure, what is the harm for the sake of the game, for the good of the game, should I say, what is the harm in reviewing the footage just so nobody else can say, ah, yeah, you should have done this or you should have done that.
But then isn't the concern then that you'll be going to the VAR every 5 minutes? If you're adamant that wasn't a penalty, but you think
Remember,
to yourself,
VAR
you know what,
is
it's
only
there.
For certain things. It's not for every aspect of the game.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're talking about penalty decisions.
Yeah.
You're talking about offside goals. These things are, I wouldn't say they're common in the game.
Yeah,
but
fair enough.
If it's for the sake of getting things right, I'm happy for the rest to go and do that.
Mm-hmm. Tash, are you a fan of VAR, and do you think the positives will outweigh the negatives?
I'll start back to front. I don't think the positives are going to outweigh the negatives based on what we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with Mike. I think anything that helps referees make the correct decision is a positive thing. But my issue with VAR is you can't use VAR for a decision that is based on personal perception.
Mm-hmm.
So for things like, you know, as we've got over the, is it a goal? Is it not a goal? Is it offside? Things that are factual, yes or no. But if it becomes when, like the penalty incident, well, was the intent there? It's all down to interpretation. And whether you have one man watching a screen, 10 men watching a screen, 100, you could still get different 50, opinions, 50. Yeah. And you're not actually helping the referees, you're actually putting more pressure on them, because we're sitting at home watching it and we're saying, well, that's not a penalty. So if you take away them being able to use it for decisions that are based on personal perception, then I think it'll be a really good thing.
So we're talking about black and white decisions.
Black and white, yes, forget or no. Penalty, was he offside? Fouls. Was he onside? Because a foul is all down to interpretation. Mm-hmm. If you speak to someone who played in the 70s, what they call a foul, we call a mass murder. Do you know what I mean? It's all down to who the person is watching. And I get what Mike said about them being a fraternity. You're asking Joe Bloggs, the referee's mate,
to call him out.
To call him out. Mm. Not just in front of 60,000 people in the stadium, in front of the other X amount of people watching on Sky or BT. You know, it's in any industry, you don't want to, you know, do your colleagues down, because you know the effect it's going to have on them. So we can't expect whoever's in watching the screen to say, yeah mate, you were wrong. Unless it is a black or white thing. If it's a personal perception thing, he's going to go with his mate, because that's a normal human reaction.
Joel, do you, first of all, do you, I saw you nodding there, so do you agree?
I agree with a lot of what Tash just said, to be honest with you. I think that that's kind of how it should be. I mean, even in those instances, though, Tash, like the first ever time it was used in this country was at Leicester, right?
Yeah.
And there was a goal that was questionable, right?
It was offside, and they kind of, I think you ruled
it. It was a handball, right?
Okay.
That's perfect, though.
Was it handball?
No, it wasn't.
I don't know. Because all the angles they showed me, I couldn't conclude. I couldn't conclusively say it was or it wasn't.
Even Roy Hodgson came out and said, after seeing it, it was the right decision.
I don't trust Roy Hodgson. I really don't.
It was against his team.
He just likes to put a lid on things. We know about him. He didn't want to speak after he got. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
Uncle Roy alone.
All right, listen.
So you believe, like Tasha, that it should be used black simply. So just to let listeners know, it's only going to be referred to for goal decisions, penalty decisions, red card incidents, and they've got a fourth option here for mistaken identity. So I'm assuming that's the Kieran Gibbs.
Yeah.
Very rarely happens.
All
but
black people look the same.
You look the same. Or fair skin in this case.
I was at Chelsea and they were using it, and he was stopping the game, and people didn't know why. You know, and that became boring.
That's about implementing it correctly,
game?
Though.
I think it was.
I watched the Arsenal game as well, Greg. And the biggest thing, and I get that I'm not for it, and I never have been for it. But I get that it's they're trialing it. So when you try something, there's going to be kinks. There's going to be mess. You know, cock ups. But my biggest thing was there was an incident in the game where there was an incident, and then the referee didn't refer to the VAR. There was another phase of play. Chelsea were on Arsenal. And then he referred back to that initial incident.
2 minutes ago.
And I just thought, how can you go back after there's been another phase of play?
Because someone's in your ear saying, mate, you made a mistake,
but
mate.
You got to deal with it there and then.
I agree with you. I think the biggest problem with the way the FA have brought it in is that no one knows what the hell is going on. Yep. No one understands it. I'm watching pundits who get paid a lot of money that probably don't do their own research, but they still don't know what's going on, because no one seems to know what's going on. If we're going to trial it, we need to know this is what it's for. This is how the referee lets the fans or the managers know this is what he's doing. And he does it in that phase of play. Because once you start going all second, third phase of play, you can't, if Chelsea score a goal, you can't take it back and punish them for something previously done.
That has happened in other countries, though.
I know, like, but can you imagine that happening here?
Joe, if you don't mind.
Go on, Mike.
I agree with what Tasha that I believe that said it. The thing is, because the fraternity is so strong, that even if there is a penalty decision, it's going to be like, oh yeah, do you know what? It was a penalty, but don't worry about it. Carry on. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you'll probably be getting that in his ear. What I'm saying is there should be an independent panel separate from referees, you know, that are educated on the law, and you know, they've got no attachment, no affiliation to referees. So what they should be doing is saying, look, you need to be, I mean, I know in rugby they publicise what's being said on the radio, and they publicise the decision and everything like that. That for me, I feel like it kind of takes the game more to an NFL, NHL kind of elaborate level, you know, and we're kind of taking away from football a bit. But I believe there should be an independent panel to say, look, you've missed something. You need to come over here now. Otherwise, this, that and the other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That way you're kind of taken away from the whole fraternity of the referees.
Yeah. Greg, is there a concern the referees will get lazy? because they know that's there in the background now. They don't have to make the big call because they think, you know what? Let me just refer to
them. I'm not saying this to insult you. No, go for it. That kind of question, I think, is a bigger problem than VAR. Mm-hmm. As in, for like decades now, referees have been under assault. We talk about the fraternity of referees there where you don't want to catch your route. And I'm not surprised. Like, the vitriol people have for referees is ridiculous. Mm. And it goes deeper than football as well. I've got this whole little spiel that's going to take us some deep, deep places on VAR. But
Let's go there.
I think it's bigger than football. I think it ties into just this sense of just people having an existential crisis where they don't believe in institutions anymore. They don't believe in truths anymore. They just see a referee as just
fake,
Everything's fake. Yeah, but they don't believe in anything. Let's say we have this independent panel. They're then going to be questioned how impartial this independent panel are.
Oh, he might be a Chelsea fan, so therefore he's going
to. And we don't know who he is. So I'll just imagine he's the worst possible example he can be. It's a lose-lose. I'm going to cite Arsene Wenger now, but there's a decaying rot in society.
I think it
goes back to loads of things. But we live in a world, and I don't want to sound like Paul Mason or something like that, but we live in a world where a lot of things make sense to a lot of people anymore, and we're not earning the money we should for the hours we're putting in. So people are angry, they're really bitter. Football in many ways is this like last thing that they can put a bit of control, a bit of stuff they can master over, they can own it a bit. And so when things happen, like, they just want to lash out, they want to hate it. And I think the issue for me is to take the tech out of it. The sanctity of the referee should be massive. When I was playing football as a kid, I got told, you don't talk back to the referee. There should be more. The respect campaign should be getting so much more money.
Totally agree. So much more support.
With the greatest respect, when you've got players that can't even respect someone else by their nationality or religion, then respecting referees are a bit lower down my list.
They're far between those players. But my thing is this. Notice Jose Mourinho, big fan, has come out and praised the referee recently. He's come out and praised the referee.
Is that tactical? Maybe I'm just being
a bit... Hi, mate, I've dumped on your doorstep now. See, come to sweep it off.
It was after the referee gave something against the cynicism.
Do you remember the referee that had to quit refereeing because Jose Mourinho said something to Chelsea fans?
Yeah, but he was right to say it. And look at the investigation that came out as a result of that. But my thing is this. We know that the UEFA was against Chelsea at that point in time. We know this.
No, come on. Yeah, this is what I mean. We know this.
But the bottom line is this. He came out and praised the referee. Now I'm thinking, if more managers did that when the referees had a good game, then it wouldn't be so bad if they come out and said he's had a poor one. Do you see what I'm saying? Because at least you're being fair. At least you can...
I don't think that's how humans work. We focus on the negative. I mean,
of course you do. But I'm just saying.
Every year, referee, Professional PM. Games Board, or whatever they call it. PGLO, I think it's called. Or maybe that's a chess ranking, I don't know. But they come out every year and say, yeah, but look, we got an independent... This is the thing, they got an independent data company to assess all their decisions. Mm. And they said we got 98% right. I think I ran that on one of the websites I was reporting for at the time. And people went, yeah, not independent, though, this data thing, if it said 98% right. I'm just thinking, like, well, what more do you want? Do you want an independent board to assess referees?
Are you making the point that VAR per se isn't the problem, whether we have it or not? You're saying that how we
We're going to moan about anything anyway.
Yeah, well, you've been saying it now with VAR, and I kind of agree on the phase of play thing, but I think people have been told that there's four things that VAR can be assessed on.
I've seen several journalists online, I've seen pundits on TV sitting there admitting they are unsure of what the rules are.
I agree on that.
And if they're the people that are feeding the information to the public, people outside of the stadium, and they're unsure.
But this is the thing, right? The information is there if you want to read it. I don't think people want to read it. People just think VAR is this like messiah that's going to come down and make all bad decisions go away. They haven't looked at the technicalities. They don't care about the technicalities.
Why do I need to sit and read about the technicalities?
Because VAR has got technicalities.
I'm sorry. I hate this argument that football is football. No, football hasn't always been this ridiculous.
But sometimes keep it simple.
So hang on a minute. I can hear certain friends of mine that I know saying right now, listening to this pod, you guys are dinosaurs. No. Football's a multi-billion pound industry.
Football's a Victorian sport, which is now in the 2018. Well, it's not a dinosaur, so it's a sport. You know what I mean?
And they would say, if the technology is there to improve the decision-making of what happens during the game, why are we not using it?
Goal line technology. That's a yes or no thing. It works.
Go on, Mahal. Let me bring it back, Mike. Go on, Mike.
Yeah, With regards to Greg, I mean, he did go off on a tangent there.
Sorry, mate. Sorry.
Do you know what's funny? If you get to the heart of what he's saying, it's so true that before a ball is kicked,
they've got preconceived ideas.
You made the enemy. Mm. What you need to understand is a team that's losing or a team that feel like they could have gone on to win or could have got a decision in their favour will always use the referee as a scapegoat.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Human nature.
That's the heart of football.
And also,
the referee is always got to be the enemy.
And also as well, Mike, I don't know, someone made a point actually on the radio a couple of days ago saying that since VAR's been brought in, there's been less diving controversies already. So are we noticing that players now are diving less in the last 2 or 3 weeks? There's not like, been one incident in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
He's talking about there was a couple at Chelsea the other day.
The VAR. Yeah, yeah.
He's just talking about 2-1 game at Chelsea the other day.
Who?
Morata got sent off and Pedro.
Yeah. Both involved in diving.
I'm going to be a mic.
Let's do it. But the thing is, the teething problems, you can already see the issues. You can already see the issues that nobody knows what's going on. One. Two, it's not eradicating the things that we're trying to eradicate, which is decisions. And referees getting things wrong, it's not eradicating those things. In fact, what it's doing is highlighting, or as someone else said, putting more pressures on referee. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
My goal for is support for referees. I'm happy to get support for referees if it means improving their decisions. I just don't see how VAR is going to help anybody at the moment. I don't see it. But in Germany, where there is a less of a hate for referees, there's less of an ego, there's less of a pride for referees. So that's why it's easier to be implemented in Germany. In England, I tell you, referees, the fraternity is very strong and they take their job very, very seriously. So it's got to be very hard to implement something like that. As you said, a lot of people are dinosaurs.
Go on, Joel.
Bringing technology to dinosaurs, it's almost impossible.
I think I think it will benefit the big clubs. It's only a matter of time before somebody sues because they've got VAR, the decision went the wrong way, and it's affected our season or our cup run, and we should have won this and won that. And that's where the game's going, horribly so. Because at the end of the day, it's a matter of human mistake. And as long as the PR for football should sell this notion that there's always going to be human mistakes in football.
Yeah.
Always. So as long as we...
And I'm cool with that. As a football fan, I'm comfortable with that.
Me too.
It's humans playing the game.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So as long as that's the case, then there's always going to... Again, I go back to the first time they used VAR, call it what you like. That was an inconclusive decision.
Today was announced as well, they're going to use it at the World Cup as well. I think there'll be a sponsor as well. I'm sure people will start.
Oh, man. Can I just say that this is why VAR, whether it works or not, is going to come in, because every time you pause it for a VAR decision,
there'll be an advert
comes in.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. And then it's a spectacle all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So are we?
That's what I don't want.
So are we all saying, I think Mike's saying we should have it, but it needs tweaking. Is everybody else on the panel here saying that?
I'm not saying we should have it.
No? Okay. Sorry.
If it's improved. I'm against it.
So, okay,
open to it.
In one word, all four of you, I'll start with you, Mike. Are you for keeping it and improving it, or do you see this is going to be too difficult and there'll be too many issues and we just scrap it and go back to letting referees referee?
You say one word.
You can't do it in one word, can you?
A or B.
I'm open to it. That's my answer.
Okay, but it needs work.
Yes.
Joel? Dead it now or just let's keep trialing it?
Goal line technology is cool for me. Bring it in for offsides when it was offside and the referee didn't see it and that's it. I'm good.
Tash?
I only have it for factual black or white decisions. Anything that is down to human judgment is ridiculous to have it for. It defeats the object. You're just adding another human's opinion to the situation, which we don't need.
Greg?
Every week you're going to see another fan calling for a different type of decision to be taken to VAR that they're not happy with. So I think this kind of slippery slope is inevitable. Like most things, football changes as it goes on. It'll be terrible in some ways. The game will respond in a positive way in others.
Happy days. Right. We were going to do 12th man with Mike, picking out a couple. In fact, we will still do. We'll do it very quickly. A couple of key decisions over the weekend, Mike, I want to get your opinion on. Both happened in the Chelsea game. Both happened actually with the Brighton attacker, Scilato. Two penalty claims. Both not given. Were they the right decisions? So the first one was with Willy Caballero. The second was with Bakayoko. Did the referee get it wrong?
The first one he got wrong. Guaranteed penalty for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever I come on, I always talk about refereeing positions.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the wrong position there. And he stuck between Bakayoko, Caballero, and I think it was Willian as well. When I looked at his where he was standing and where the incident happened. But for me, that's where you need your lino to help you.
Help you out, yeah.
I always say, whenever I'm refereeing, I always say to my linos, listen, if you're anything less than 90% sure, don't give it. Because I don't mind the pressure being on me. Mm. I can handle it. Mm. But I don't want anything to be on you. So if you're not sure, if there's any a little bit of doubt, then just don't give it.
Okay. All right.
I feel like that was a penalty for me.
Okay, nice one. Let's very quickly, do we have a goal of the weekend? Guys,
you know my goal of the weekend. You don't even need to ask.
Very brief. Let's start with you, Tasha.
Martial.
Obviously, Lacazette.
Lacazette. Why?
Obviously.
Because he's been Lacazette recently. Yeah.
Come on.
Boy.
He's been Lacazette recently.
Just because it was just so Arsenal. It was intricate. It was Ozil having a great game, and no one can tell me nothing about him. So
I can tell you a lot about him, Tash.
I mean, it was Crystal Palace.
I don't care. You beat what's Christmas in front of you. You never hear that.
I'd like him to beat what's in front of him when it's a big team, but I take your
point. Don't start today, Jordan.
Next week. Greg, what was your goal of the weekend?
I am so glad Natasha picked Lacazette, because I'm picking Willian against Brighton, because it was every single part of Lacazette's goal, but just better in every single moment.
I was leaning more towards Willian.
The back heel from Hazard was better than Ozil's back heel. The touches involved were better. The strike was better. Lacazette kind of, it didn't.
Do you not see I'm hangry? Like,
you're hangry?
Yeah.
Wow. So was Batshuayi, and he set him up, and it was wonderful. Willian against Brighton, better. Better in all by all counts.
There was a third good goal as well on the weekend, a good team goal. I've forgotten what it was now. I was going to pick between Lacazette, William, and there was someone else. But anyway,
Martial.
Yeah, it wasn't that one. It wasn't that goal. I'm with Greg. I think William's goal was incredible. It was really good. Right, let's now move on to our final topic, guys. Let's pay a little bit of a tribute to Ronaldinho, who announced he's retiring last week. Although I thought he retired 4 years ago officially.
He became like a Barcelona ambassador before he retired, didn't he?
No idea. It seems like he went to any club that basically would pay him a nice wage. Yeah. He paid for some really random clubs when he left.
A good nightclub. That was the
more hyper. Mike, I've kept you on because I know that you're a massive Ronaldinho fan. I'll ask you the question: is his lack of longevity at the top what's keeping him behind Lionel Messi as one of the greatest?
In your opinion,
I'm asking the question.
Listen, for me, he's the greatest that ever did it, and no one can change my opinion.
Why?
He put a smile on my face. You know, that period when he was playing football is when I enjoyed football the most. Right now, I feel I would say Ronaldo, Messi. Don't get me wrong, I've watched them quite a bit, but Ronaldinho, every single week he had me tuned in just to see if he's going to do something different, what he's going to do, and it was the greatest time in football for me personally.
Tasha, in the pantheon of our generation greatest attackers, is Ronaldinho ahead of Messi?
No, not for me, but it's all down to personal,
of course,
perception.
And what's yours?
And I lost some love for him when he kept me waiting for 2 hours and 40 minutes to do an interview.
That's quick.
Was recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just before Christmas.
So before then, what did you make?
He would have been above Ronaldo. Let's keep it that. Yeah, no, I think
Ronaldo,
but that whole kind of turning up late, loving to party, loving life, is probably why a lot of people do adore him, because it makes him more real, makes him one of us. You know, it's who would you be if you were a footballer? Of course you'd be partying up in the nightclub with the VIP section and living life.
Trust.
Exactly. You know, if you're going to be, if most of us were footballers, we'd probably be someone like a Ronaldinho. Because, but it is sad that he didn't have that application in his game.
And there you go. And maybe that's why a lot of people wouldn't be Ronaldinho, yeah, because they would see his peak years were 4 or 5. He only really had 4 or 5 really top years at the top. Look up, years at the top. Do you know what I mean? For a guy that was one of the most talented of our generation, he wasn't at the top for a long time. So maybe it's his lifestyle that you're endorsing, that you're saying that
I'm saying a lot of us who've grown up from working class backgrounds, who if we had our dream job and got our dream life, some of us wouldn't be able to handle it, you know. So I think a lot of us can relate to that. But then there's also the thing of, you know, you could have knuckled down for a few more years. And
Ronaldo parties a lot too, you know, as well. You know, Ronaldo's not in the library. Yeah,
he doesn't drink though.
He doesn't drink, but he still has fun.
The drinking, the effects alcohol has on your body is very different, definitely for a professional sports person.
And he had a beer belly, Ronaldo. When I met him,
I kind of felt like, boy, you've just kept going from last night. Like, we've all been there. Put your sunglasses on, pull the hat down.
He was chunky in Milan. Come on, he was.
He was. What was your favourite? Do you have a favourite goal of Ronaldinho?
Oh, mate, it's my favourite goal of all time, of all players, of everything. It was at Barcelona against Villarreal. And do you remember the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games?
Yes.
He could do a trick in it called the McTwist, which was like a backflip where you also did like a kind of sideways spin. He basically did that while he did like almost like a gazer. He kicked the ball up above him, did a McTwist, and then like a kind of a spinning bicycle kick, and just it totally buys into what Mike was saying. Like, for me, Messi is the best player ever, but that doesn't mean that Ronaldinho doesn't, you know, he's got an argument there, because for me, like, Messi's just done it for so long and he's
is it the longevity factor that slightly
it's not just the longevity factor, because Messi's just like sublime, clinical, all the rest of it, but Ronaldinho, his peaks. I've never seen and never will see a player do things with a football that Ronaldinho could do. He was the ultimate flair player. He was just the most fun player of all time. Like,
100% agree.
You know when people say like
Fun's
Pele or
fun for so long though.
Yeah, but you know when people, you know, in Brazil they love Garrincha more than they love Pele. Yes. And I feel like Pele is Messi, Ronaldinho
bit
is Garrincha.
Safe, bit boring. Not boring.
Not boring.
But, no, but I know what
he's,
you mean.
He's
you
just
mean.
Like, he's like, he's like the orchestra, whereas like Ronaldinho is like the jazz quartet. Like, it's more fun. It's got like...
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Just love him. Absolutely love him.
Joe, on Greg's point that I was going to ask you, is the reason, the reason why I like Ronaldinho so much is when I judge goals, one of the first questions I ask myself is, who else could have scored that goal? And Ronaldinho scored certain goals that I think to myself...
Ronaldinho versus Chelsea, by the way.
That's the real ghost goal.
I was at that game. And that was going to say. See that night there? Special nights for me, man. Special nights. Like, when I was a 14-year-old boy and I realised I wasn't going to be a footballer anymore. Anyway, 16 my brother was, but anyway, okay. I'll get on to that.
I didn't even have a dream.
I realised and I said, right, am I going to stick close to the game? Writing and journalism was that night at the Bridge was. There was a couple nights at the Bridge where Barcelona come and Ronaldinho played, actually. But that day he scored that goal was super special. That game was just super. Like, and for me, I don't know if I've ever seen a player as nonchalant on the ball. Like, at his own will, at his own pace, when he wants. Not looking. Mm. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that. And I've seen them all play.
You know what you were saying earlier? Oh, he didn't work hard enough. If he was a worker, he wouldn't have played the way he did.
Yeah.
Like, that wouldn't have worked.
I don't think it's that he didn't work hard enough. I think it's that he didn't take care of himself.
But even then, I just think the exuberance of how he played. Like,
that's
why
it was so great.
Exactly. That he played his heart on his sleeve and maybe he just kind of went, I've done it. We say like, oh, if he kept up for a few years longer... The dedication you have to take to get to the where he got to in football. Do you know how many people in the world play football and want to become a professional footballer?
That's right.
And he did it, even if he did it for more, he did it for what, like, we say in 3-4 years? To be the best player in the world for 3-4 years.
And in that bracket, he pretty much won everything. So as you say, he might have just thought to himself, you know what, I've won it all. I want to go and fund that. I've made money.
I also think we're forgetting that before he got to Barca as well, at PSG, he was ripping up that league.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Him and Okocha single-handedly were doing things I've never seen before.
And let's not forget, David Seaman still can't sleep.
Oh, jeez. No, we'll talk.
And the fact that he could take John Terry to the floor so easily,
yeah,
it's just joyful.
Yeah,
he's so strong on the ball. There's nothing with Messi as well. Like, you just, you look at him, oh, he's a great entertainer, he's a juggler, but his basics as well, he could just hold you off, he could get around you. It's just ridiculous.
At his own will, at his own pace, when he wants, at any level of the game. Special man.
So for you, overall, Ronaldinho or Messi?
Of the two, I'd have to get to Messi, but I would have had Ronaldinho in my team.
Stash?
Messi.
Greg?
Style Ronaldinho, substance Messi.
Mike, is it a stupid question?
Yeah.
Okay. We will end it there. And thank you very much, Mike, for coming on the pod. Cheers, man.
No worries, man.
Big up, Mike.
Peace.
Later.
Cheers, luck. Guys. See ya.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, let's wrap. Let's end it there. Okay, so thank you very much, guys, for coming on this week's FFP. Do not forget to subscribe to us via iTunes. We're on Audio Boom. We're on Instagram and Facebook as well. Go on, Dreddy.
R.I.P. Cyril Regis.
Yes, we gave a shout out on our other other platform on Pyre Radio to Cyril Regis. I will well remembered actually give a shout out to my condolences to his friends and family. I think we both saw him at a function a month or so ago.
Yeah,
the Blacklist.
Feels like that. The football Blacklist.
That was my birthday.
Yeah, he was well. Yeah. I only got to speak to him for like literally 10 seconds because he was mobbed.
Yeah.
He was being mobbed.
But it gave time to everyone. Every time you saw him, he would, even if it was just a couple of seconds, he would still stop and say hello. And
yeah, that one touched me, to be honest. Like, because it's an, after the football Blacklist last year, we lost Ugo, and then after the football Blacklist again, we see we've lost Cyril.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just like.
It's harder when you've met your heroes and when they're genuinely legends on and off the field.
No, he was humble. Humility was his strength, you know what I mean? So,
and I think the point that you've both just made there is really significant, because in amongst all the kind of tributes that are kind of paid tribute to him being a pioneer and a great footballer, I think when you kind of get around that, he was just a nice person. Yeah. He was just a nice guy. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But people, no, I've not heard anybody, even before he passed, say anything negative about Cyril Regis. And that, I think, says a lot about a man as well. Definitely. So great footballer, nice guy, and obviously a pioneer as well. Yeah. And our thoughts do go out to his family as well. Don't forget to subscribe to the pod via iTunes. We are on Audio Boom and Facebook and Instagram as well. We are now also on YouTube as well. So our shows will be going up on YouTube. So everyone say hello, everyone say hi.
Hey.
There we go. Hey, hey, hey. We'll get every show up on YouTube as well. So go tell your friends and subscribe to that too. Until next week, peace.
Peace.